Skies over West London. I'm Gab. He's Jules. Jules, we have a packed show today. We got, obviously, the Champions League semifinals. We'll be getting into that at the top. But we also have UEFA taking a hard line against the Super League. Moises Llorens and I reporting that story. Jose Mourinho, the new king of Rome. Unbelievable turnaround. Story. But let's start with the Champions League semifinals. Let's start specifically a few miles from here at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea going through, 2-0 victory over Real Madrid. We'll get into Real Madrid's issues, but Chelsea, I thought, were phenomenal and could have scored many, many more goals. I mean, this is a tip of the hat to Thomas Tuchel.
It is, it is. They should have won 4-0 easily. Maybe 4-1 if you give Benzema one of the chances that he had or the save that Mendy made. But Thomas Tuchel, we've said so many times how impressive he's been, so many words. I don't know what more we can say. He now has beaten, in the 4 months he's been at Chelsea, Zinedine Zidane, Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp, Jose Mourinho, Carlo Ancelotti and Diego Simeone twice. And in those 7 games, he hasn't conceded a single goal. So it's not just beating those guys, you know, different competitions, is how solid they've been.
But he got his rear end handed to him by Big Sam, to be fair.
Yeah, but that doesn't count. But I just think in the space of 4 months, to be able to have this kind of impact in another country, another culture that you don't know, that you've never been coaching in before, it's just incredible.
See, if you Google the archives of the Time, the Times newspaper, Times of London, you will find a piece. I love this. A few things. I'm not saying this. I don't often get these long-term predictions right. But like when I fell in love with Thomas Tuchel, and that is when he was the manager of Mainz. That's when my Tuchelista card goes back to that. As far as Real Madrid are concerned, obviously, it's kind of been a reflection of the season, right? Mm-hmm. It's been tough. It's been tight. When they've done things, it's been through individuals rather than collective play. In this game, they had to go for it, given the result of the first leg and Chelsea's away goal. And there was nothing there other than, again, individuals. Benzema coming up twice.
Yeah.
And everything else just seemed to be missing. They couldn't match the intensity and they couldn't match the organization.
And the worst, I was at the game, Gab, and the worst is that there was no movement. And maybe on television you could not see properly because of the way it was shot, but at the ground, with the whole view of the pitch, there was just nothing. No movement, no running, no... There was just nothing there. Collectively, I mean. So you have the ball and all you play is feet. Feet there. So for Chelsea, who are so good defensively, so well-structured, organised, so easy to defend. You know exactly where the ball is going to go because the ball never goes in behind or into space or in between two players, or there's just no, you know, 2 steps on the side to create an angle. None of that. And I was like, what are you doing?
That's the thing. I mean, Chelsea managed to play with quantity and quality, as we like to say in Italy. Real Madrid, I think, had a big issue with it. I think possibly also because, you know, at some point, we've said this all along, age catches up to you. Mm. So Toni Kroos, Luka Modric, wrong side of 30, you know, at some point, they're not going to be able to have that energy, especially when they have this crazy whirling dervish that is N'Golo Kante running all around them constantly. And even if you somehow evade him, then you have 3 central defenders plus Azpilicueta, who was playing wing back, but you know, it's like a pretendo wing back because Azpilicueta is now officially, I think, a center back, no matter where he plays. So it's really, really difficult. And then up front, you have, you know, the one guy the two guys who you thought could create that acceleration, create those one-on-ones, Eden Hazard and Vinicius. Vinicius starting out effectively almost as a wing back and changing his position. I did not think he had a good game at all.
No.
And you are in Eden Hazard, where you're gambling on his quality coming back home and whatever else. It's really, really difficult.
It is. And I felt a bit for Hazard because it could have all been the fairy tale of he comes back, not for Chelsea fans, but he comes back and then suddenly he finds that form again. But you play him centrally, which means that every single time, pretty much, he receives the ball with his back to goal. And not just with his back to the Chelsea goal, but also with either Rudiger, and when I do this is Rudiger for you.
This is the sound that Rudiger makes.
Exactly. Or Thiago Silva, or Christensen, or Jorginho, or someone there. To not let him even the time to turn around or anything. Why he was so good on the wing is because often you would get the ball and face your defender, and then you could go one-on-one, and that's when he's really good. Him playing with his back to goal is never going to work. So I think this one, Zidane got it wrong as well, and there was not creativity, there was nothing.
That was a function of the system, and we'll get more into that. I want to get you, though, on the fallout. Because obviously when stuff like this happens, there always are scapegoats. And Eden Hazard, I knew it. I knew it when the final whistle, you see him joking and laughing with some of his former Chelsea teammates. And sure enough, less than an hour later, Jose Pedrerol from El Chiringuito in Spain, you know, pushes a picture and says, "What?" I know this stings as a fan when you see somebody fraternizing with the opposition, especially when it's somebody who hasn't lived up to his transfer fee at all. Is this fair, or is this understandable, or does Hazard care?
He should have known better, no? He's been in this game long enough to know that. I know the two, at Stamford Bridge, the two dressing rooms are apart from each other, so because you don't cross. So, but still, he could have seen Zuma and Mendy and all the others who are very good friends, well, Zuma especially.
And who was good friends with Mendy? How does he even know Mendy?
No, I mean, Mendy was there, but more to say well done or something. But Zuma was really the one he was laughing with, and right. I get it. But not like this, not in front of the whole cameras. I mean, I saw it where I was, and already I thought, oh, come on. Yeah. And I knew exactly what would happen.
Yucking it up with the opposition when you've just been knocked out is a terrible look. Mm. I think also, there's always fallout in Madrid. Hazard is going to be a scapegoat here.
Yeah.
Those of us who are from countries that didn't get to participate in the Champions League semifinals will inevitably put our spin on this. And the spin in Italy, but I think there is some validity to it. The two outstanding players, or two of the outstanding players in the semifinals, were N'Golo Kanté and Riyad Mahrez.
Yeah.
Two Claudio Ranieri sides
from
the
no
legendary
way.
Leicester side, the greatest fairy tale ever told.
I thought you were going to say two Paris-born and bred kids who no one never believed in, who never made it to an academy, who could have easily given up on football, stopped playing, but then through determination, character, made it, and then look at what they are. You know, 8 years ago, they were playing in lower league football in France. But you prefer Ranieri, and Ranieri made them, basically. That's what you mean.
I'll say this. I think this reinforces the Leicester's title victory. What a huge part of those two guys, and obviously Jamie Vardy and the whole other thing. Those two guys played. And it also says, I think, there is a bit of a lesson there about, I think, the globalization of football. And just simply in the sense that, you know, you don't have to be a City or Chelsea fan to claim a little part of the story. Yeah. You as a Parisian can claim it. Yeah. I can claim it because of Claudio.
Yeah, of course. And he had a big influence on them anyway. I was only joking.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I mean, and obviously Claudio didn't bring Riyad Mahrez to the club.
No,
but obviously that was a season that he really flourished.
Completely.
And I will also say this. There were a lot of people who said, oh, yeah, they're fine at Leicester. You know, Mahrez can be a big star at Leicester.
Of course.
But he couldn't do it on a bigger stage where there's more competition. Kante's still too small. Even after the Leicester season. And I'm just happy for them that I think they've proven people wrong. Moving on from that parenthesis, Zinedine Zidane, you know, he's often seen as somebody who doesn't tinker tactically, whatever. He went with something different. He brought Sergio Ramos back in. Yeah. That was essentially, I mean, you were there, you saw it. It was essentially a back three with Mondi. I mean, an asymmetrical back three, if you want.
Yeah.
But Furlan Mondi and Vinicius on the right, Benzema and Hazard up front, and then it might turn into more of a 3-4-3 or whatever.
Then
it didn't work.
It didn't work at all. And is it because Sergio Ramos could not play on his own in a two, in a back four? Because that was only his fourth game in 2021. He's literally just came back from injury because of his age. Do you think that maybe could have played a part in the sense that, we would be too exposed if it's just Sergio Ramos and Eder Militao, or Sergio Ramos and Nacho, for example? So hence the back three.
I think that is a part of it, because you want to have Sergio Ramos on the pitch for the intangibles. Now, my friends in analytics say there's no such thing as intangibles. I mean, yeah, but, you know, the reality is, you're Zidane, you've been there. The guy is a warrior and a winner. He can pop up for you with you for a goal. He's done it many times in the past. Mm. He brings leadership. But equally, you're aware, right now, he's not in the physical condition to play in a two against Timo Werner and Kai Havertz.
Against runners. Yeah, definitely.
Especially when you know you need to chase the game.
But then don't play him then, maybe. Because that back three was never going to work, Gab. Not against a team like this. So apart from the movement and the lack of movement that we explained before, even just to try to go and get the ball back from Chelsea, try to press. Look at the first goal. The first goal, they are all over the place defensively. The back line is not even, it's a back, but there's no line. Okay? The midfield, they're all over the place as well. They're beaten too easily. It's a simple 1-2. It's Kante with just a turn and a really good first touch, but just a turn, then a 1-2, and then it's too quick for them. So it's not even just with the ball, they lack creativity and movement and intensity. Okay, no problem. But it's that he tried something defensively, or certainly in terms of organization, that backfired completely, because either they didn't really know what to do, but they certainly were never, never structurally organized enough to be able to cope with the way Chelsea were playing, the way they built from the back, the way they came out of the back. How many times they tried to press? I mean, it was too easy for Chelsea, far too easy from start to finish.
This is not a team that suited to pressing the opposition in any way, because obviously Benzema will do it. Eden Hazard just doesn't have the legs or the mindset of it. In fact, even when he was fit at Chelsea, he didn't have the mindset for it. You've got Modric and Kroos. You don't want them chasing people around. So I think inevitably they were going to be in a situation where if they lost the ball, you know, it was almost like a game of basketball. Where if they lost the ball, we're not going to press you high. You come back. You come back at us. We'll try to deal with it that way. It didn't work. I do wonder if maybe this wouldn't have been a game. You know, we've talked about the idea of Fede Valverde at wing back. Yeah. If you're going to do that, have maybe he would give you more of that energy down the right. Yeah. And obviously, it's not his natural position. But then you can't play with 12 players, and then you feel like you need Vinicius because he's got the genuine pace. And then Hazard, you have the emotion of coming back. Like, it's,
I don't know. For
six
example,
of one, one half dozen of another.
I know, but look at, so okay, Hazard. And again, we talked about his position, wrong call. Okay. You leave him on the pitch until the 80th minute or something. And at no point, you try to change his position. You can see it's not working. You can see he's got Rudiger, again, the whole world on his back. He can't do anything. Move him wide. You bring in on Asensio and you bring on Valverde to play on the other side. You keep your back three again, at least, even if Sergio Ramos cannot play in a back four on two on his own. You've got nothing to lose anyway. I mean, I know you were 1-0 down, so you could still, I guess, get a goal and get into extra time. But why don't you try? But certainly move Hazard wide. That was not doing him any service, team any service either. And I just thought, it was such a big game for Zidane. And we've said he's improved tactically as a coach. He had been brilliant at times this season in the way they played against Liverpool. Although, if you're Jurgen Klopp watching the game last night, do you think again about the Naby Keita experiment and those 40 minutes that he played? Because, I mean, this was not a good Real Madrid team. But I thought Zidane got it wrong at the start of the game and then throughout the whole game with his coaching. And I'm sad because you know how much I love him.
My friend who used to work at Real Madrid and is a huge Real Madrid fan texted me and said, you know, at the hour mark, he's like, okay, time to move Sergio Ramos to center forward. Go to a back four. Just do it that
way. Do something.
Just have him
something
up there just to create chaos and wait what happens.
Do you think this is it for Zidane? I asked him the question after the game and he said, you know what, I haven't thought about it. We've got four games to play. He was never going to say anything different, but he said, we've got four games in La Liga, we can win it.
He's right. It can't be it for
but he's not going to be there next season. You know what, he looked tired yesterday, I thought.
I don't think Florentino Perez is going to sack Zinedine Zidane. I don't think there's any chance. It's possible that Zinedine Zidane says, okay, rebuild, see where we are, let me step aside. But I cannot imagine Florentino.
No, maybe you're right.
I mean, it just, look,
you don't feel that he feels like the end of that era, of that chapter, you know, and isn't it, let me put it this way to you. You have to do such a big overhaul of this squad, but Zidane is so much attached personally, emotionally to a lot of those players that it might be too hard for him to say, okay, Luca, you know, you've been great. We've been great together. We've won four Champions League. We did this. We won two titles. But now it's time for you to go. Same with Sergio Ramos. Same with, I don't know. Do you see what I mean? Wouldn't it be easier if you bring someone else, someone new, someone who doesn't have that sort of intimate relationship almost with some of them to say, you know what, it's time for you to go.
I see that argument where I'm not 100% on. You know, we can sit here and say we need to do the big overhaul, but, and I hate to bring up COVID and transfer market window and then what else, but in losses, I'm not sure it can happen this summer. Because already Florentino said in one of his stupid TV appearances where he made no sense, but he said, you know, the Modric's contract had been extended or was going to be extended. So Modric is going to be back. Kroos is going to be back. Benzema is going to be back. Where are you going to get all the money for this overhaul in this situation right now?
Well,
I wonder if maybe, you know, we talk about the size of the overhaul, right? But just quickly run through this, and we'll go this. I'm sure we'll have this many times in the summer. But when you think about it, right, Courtois is back.
Yeah.
Danny Carvajal, you'll get another season out of, and Lucas Vazquez can play right back, as we've discovered. And I think that's one of the upsides.
He's probably going to go, Lucas Vazquez. Out of contract.
That is one guy you might want to extend because of his versatility. He's not going to cost you very much. But that is a good point about Lucas Vazquez. Militao, you found out, can play a little bit. Yeah. You've got Alaba coming in. You have Varane. Even if you don't extend Ramos, Valen, you've got Nacho.
Yeah. Varane wants to go.
Again, I know he wants to go. You know, I want to drive a Maserati. You don't always get what you want. He's still under contract, right?
Yeah, 1 year.
But you know, you can take your chances with that. Left back, you're fine.
Yeah.
Midfield, you're stuck with Modric and Kroos and Casemiro and Valverde. I don't think that's a horrible unit.
No.
You know, you maybe the Blanco looked okay. You know, maybe if you can bring in another body there. Further up the pitch, obviously Hazard's an issue, but, you know, Benzema you'll get another year out of, even if you don't remember. I'm putting to one side the go and sign Haaland or whatever. Vinicius showed he can play a little bit. Rodrigo, you know, at some point you have to have faith in these people.
Yeah, but they're also inconsistent gap. Rodrigo, Vinicius, Asensio.
Maybe that's the question. Maybe you have to ask yourself, can Zidane get the consistency? Can he get these people to stay fit and contribute regularly? Because when Asensio and Isco are on top of their game, they're really valuable contributors, right? And they can transition this team forward, and they're not that old. If you are going to go for the mega overhaul, that's going to be very expensive. But yeah, hey, don't worry. Gareth Bale is back.
Yeah, true.
A word on Chelsea. You know my skepticism, and you have no problem admitting when I was wrong. I'm a huge fan of Kai Havertz. I think he's found his position, and his position is to play center forward. Not false nine. His position is to play center forward, which is what he did last night and which is what he's been doing. There's nothing false about him. He is a nine, right?
But he's a different type of nine.
He's a nine who moves and creates space. That's fine. I mean, that's like saying Benzema is a different kind of nine. You know,
They're the same player. That's fine. You can have nines with different profiles.
Exactly. And I want, I mean, is this it? Is this the trio? Havertz, Mount, Werner? Or is it Havertz, Mount, and sometimes Werner, sometimes Pulisic, sometimes Ziyech?
Yeah, I still think he will rotate and change because he likes also to adapt to the opposition. And I think he knew yesterday that Havertz could also hurt them in transition, exactly like they did in quick transition, especially not to use his pace because he doesn't have much pace, but in transition when you play into his feet, like on the first goal, you get the ball, you've got the ball, it's a quick attack, and then he's there. And I think for that he's good. There was a lot of fluidity. Maybe you could not see on TV, but sometimes it was Werner and Havertz dropped a bit deeper. Mount was really the only one staying as a second striker, if you want, or playmaker. But then Pulisic come on and he's outstanding for 20 minutes.
Well, I'm just thinking from a defender's perspective, right? If you've spent an hour
dealing
with Werner, right?
Completely.
And then you think, oh, okay, finally, Werner's sprinting so much. Now he's like going to be a little bit, he's going to lose some sharpness. And then you bring Pulisic on.
Who's even
goes
quicker
0 to 100.
And the first 2 yards, he's even quicker than Werner.
All of a sudden, that becomes really tough.
Yeah, it is. And you're right, Ziyech has been, you know, underused, let's say, in recent weeks and games. But he can also do a job. I just think they've got so many options. They're so good. But again, it's the structure and the discipline and the organization and knowing exactly what to do in all different situations, moments of the game. It was really, really impressive.
I know we all love Poch, and he's asking an uncomfortable question. Does Leo regret what he did?
It's a good question, Gab. I don't know. I said to Tuchel yesterday, I said, do you feel like it's a bit of a revenge? Or he said, listen, I'm too happy to be here. But you could tell that I said to him, he said, this is really you. This is your team. It's easy to see. It's like Mainz. It's like Dortmund, certainly the first season. That was not like this in Paris. And he looked at me and we both knew. And he went like, yeah, it was different. And I just wish at times that maybe the PSG dressing room listened a bit more and worked harder, like the Chelsea dressing room, which far more receptive to what he tells them.
Different players, different situations.
Yeah, of course.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Manchester City are, of course, the other Champions League finalists. Jules, I want to start with the fact, because it seemed to me that, all right, if Paris Saint-Germain were going to do this, 2-1 from the first leg, they needed all their big guns. Let's just start with the Kylian Mbappe thing, because he picks up an injury.
Yeah.
He's on the bench. And I'm like, okay, so he's fit enough to be on the bench. Maybe he can't play 90 minutes. You tweet during the game in French that he's not wearing his basket. Sorry, that he's wearing his baskets, not his crampons, which confused the hell out of anybody who went on Google Translate. Obviously, baskets is French slang for trainers.
Yes, that's right.
And crampons, I knew what it was because it's a mountaineering term, yeah, of course. Yeah. But crampons basically means studs. So
yes,
he wasn't wearing.
Exactly.
He didn't come on at all. Would he have come on if it was closer? Was he there be a cheerleader?
No, I think the idea was hopefully that PSG still been in the game with 10 minutes to go. Let's say they're leading 1-0 up, for example. And then you bring him on. It's risky because he still feels the pain in his calf. But you have to go with him. And I think he put the crampons, the studs at halftime. But it looked, I mean, he was sat literally next to me and you could see the body language. He was never going to come on. At halftime, you know, when all the Serbs come out on the pitch and have a play with the ball and this like that, he was not even there. It's a shame because I think it would have been a completely different story, and especially seeing how high the defensive line was for City. But Icardi was never going to be a threat for them. Moise Kean is not fully fit either. So it's a real shame. I don't know what would have happened had Kylian been there and fully fit.
Would City have played that line if...
I don't think so.
If... Yeah, that's what I mean. So you know Mauricio is going to do what he does. What struck me about this is I thought this was just a completely professional, comprehensive, really good performance for Manchester City.
Yeah.
And you can say, all right, they went down to 10 men after Di Maria went out. I was curious, all right, we're used to this system, and I don't even know what to call it, because is it a 4-2-4-0 system? Is it just a straight 4-4-2? Is it a 4-2-4? Because there's just so many options and so much flexibility in that front four. And it's just so difficult to play against. The line of Mahrez, De Bruyne, Bernardo, and Foden, the fact that Mahrez and Foden, if they start wide, yeah, they can go and be genuine wingers, but they come inside. It's just so confusing to play against.
It is, although I thought PSG played well and, you know, they created some chances. There was the Di Maria shot on the ball that Bernardo lost.
Marquinhos
header on the crossbar. I mean, the blocks from Stones and Ruben Diaz were fantastic.
And Zinchenko.
And Zinchenko as well, of course, on Neymar, on different shots through the whole game. So I don't think PSG should be ashamed, one, to lose against this City team in the semi-final. And they're the only team who have been in the semi-final last season and this season. And to the way they played either. Yeah, of course, they lacked maybe a bit of luck, like Pochettino said. But City were brilliant. And you're right, it's so hard to play because it's tiring mentally to face them because of the way they move the ball. They've got that flexibility, but also that position game that is so hard to pick up because they know all so well what to do. When Zinchenko play and Cancelo, they stretch you so much that it's even harder in a way. And yeah, it's so hard, and they deserve a lot of credit, and they've worked so hard to get there, and they deserve it. Even if it's not always perfect, but they've won 11 games.
No,
11 games out of 12, Gab.
What to me is remarkable is in these individuals, now that they have, because of the big league, they have the luxury of being able to rest players and whatever. And when they have everybody fit, they can play with an intensity and a selflessness and a work rate that you just don't see from players of this quality.
Yeah.
You know, it's combining, like I said earlier, quality and quantity. They do this incredibly well. Unbelievable team ethic too, in the sense that it's difficult to pick out an outstanding Manchester City player.
And you know what? I saw Ruben Dias after the game, and I saw Mahrez as well, and Mahrez was all happy, and you know, it was great. But Ruben Dias said something that for me was the key. It was like, you know, we won today because we were warriors, because we all went to war. We all fought, and we were there to fight for each other, for this team. And I think that's the mentality that maybe they didn't have before under Pep, but certainly that Ruben Dias emphasizes so well, and that maybe he brought a bit with him when he moved in the summer.
He's been one of the stories of the season. Shout out to the first American to reach a Champions League final.
Yeah.
That's right. Big congratulations to Zach Steffen. All right, Jules, I think we can all agree, most people agree, Manchester City fully deserved to beat Paris Saint-Germain over the two legs. However, there was a bit of an ugly coda involving the referee, Bjorn Kuipers, with some Paris Saint-Germain players. I saw Verratti interviewed, I saw Paredes interview saying that he used some inappropriate language towards them.
Yeah, I mean, I was, to do the commentary on French TV, I was, as I was saying before, by the PSG bench. And when Paredes came off, he sat down and said to all the others, this is incredible, incredible. He told me to F off, and everybody seemed a bit shocked. But anyway, then the game went on. I was not sure if he was talking about the referee or someone else. Anyway, then Ander Herrera came to do the interview on French television with me, and we, you know, we talk about the game and everything. And then I said, thank you. And he goes, oh, just one last thing. I just want to say that we always told to respect referees. And that's what we have to do. But tonight the referee told Paredes to F off. And this is not cool. You know, this is not, if we do that, we will get a 3-4 match ban, and this is not nice. Then Marco Verratti comes on, and I said to him, this is what Ander said. And he said, no, it's not just Paredes, it's me as well. He told me to F you a couple of times during the game. And again, if I say that to him, I get a 10 match ban. So none of the PSG players were saying that as an excuse of like why they were knocked out. But they were just saying, this is not cool. You know, this is not the way a referee should speak to players in a game like this, of this dimension as well. I mean, any game, but I can understand them.
It's bizarre because Kuipers obviously is a very experienced referee. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you speak to ex-referees, they'll tell you that sometimes some like to have like a bantery, jokey relationship with players and so on. And I think in some contexts that is appropriate if you know the player and whatever. And maybe you might drop the F word in there. I don't have an issue with it. But clearly, if you're going to do it, you have to know that the other person is going to take it in context.
Yeah.
And certainly it didn't feel like this was the case at all. So I'm kind of surprised. I'm really surprised.
Yeah, me too.
That this happened. And especially given, I mean, let's face it, right? Kuipers is Dutch. All right, Herrera, I assume, speaks English. But, you know, Verratti has issues with Italian. That's a word everybody
And I know the PSG players lost their head at the end. And, the Di Maria red card. And then the Kimpembe tackle and the Danilo Pereira tackle on Gabriel Jesus. Both of them right at the end. Probably deserves a red as well. But I just don't think, and PSG should keep their nerves better. But I don't think it helps if already after losing and being knocked out, you know you're knocked out, it's not helping when the referee add to the tension and the frustration to the players.
It's an unusual story. I just hope this is not something we need to see again.
No.
On Kuipers' VAR work, it was really, really funny. I think he just, you know, with the penalty, I think he just didn't see it.
No.
But this is what VAR is there for. Again, the debate is endless. It goes on forever. You probably know my views on it. But, like, this is an example where
completely
it could have changed the outcome of this game in a big way.
Of course.
Pep Guardiola, we talked about his lineup. Were you surprised to see Fernandinho in there on his birthday instead of Rodri?
So it was his birthday, and I said on French television, I said, oh, maybe it's a birthday present. And then Pep comes out on BT and said, it's his birthday, that's my present to him. I think two things.
Because he heard you.
Maybe, but two things. Well, three, I think. One, the experience. You know, Rodri is a young
child. And
Rodri had one season at Villarreal, season at Atletico.
Yeah.
A first season where he struggled a bit at City, and this second season right now.
When he was good.
Yeah, he's been good, but it doesn't maybe...
Okay, fine. No, I get it. Fernandinho is undoubtedly more experienced.
The vice, as in being vicious and intelligent in how you commit tactical fouls and being a bit cynical like Fernandinho is maybe the king of.
He does have the cynicism. He's also gotten some pretty stupid red cards, Fernandinho, I want to say. But
still.
Fine.
And I think maybe the mobility. You know, Rodri is 191. I don't know that how many feet that is. It's a lot of feet. And certainly doesn't move.
It's about 6 foot three.
Yeah. Doesn't move as well as a Fernandinho, even at 36 years old, who, as we know, read the game so well and everything. So maybe I thought this is why. I don't think Fernandinho had the greatest game of his life. And I don't know if had Rodri played, maybe it would have been the same outcome of the game. But I could maybe understand why Pep put him in there.
Well, Fernandinho got Di Maria sent off.
Yeah, true.
You know, I think he did his part. I think it's interesting, especially given Fernandinho's contractual situation and everything. I thought it was a big call, and it was a correct call in terms of reading the moment from Pep. Same thing goes with Zinchenko starting at left back. João Cancelo is a better player, but in this type of game. Yeah. You can totally understand Zinchenko, especially after the second half he had in the first leg.
And you stretch PSG's defense, and Florenzi is, I'm sorry, I was going to say not a good player. This was not by far his best performance, and I think Zinchenko caused him far too many problems.
You got to pick on the fact that Paris Saint-Germain at one point had three Italian players on the pitch.
And maybe that's why we didn't make
it. Yeah, maybe that's it. I want to talk about Neymar, because... this is a story that bubbles under the surface, and we've all gone about how there's COVID, no money, whatever. Is there really a debate over extending his contract in Paris?
Yeah.
Is there really a sense that, hey, maybe we sell him now?
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know. And there's the thing that is still not confirmed and announced, that the contract that we've been told for 4 months now is all sorted, pretty much. They just need to sign at the bottom, and it's not there yet. Maybe they were waiting for this Champions League to finish or to see if they were in the final. I don't know, but there might be something a bit strange there. The fact that he's still not announced when the club have been briefing people that it was done.
We're talking because he's got a year left.
He's got a year left. Is it because
just to be clear on this, Neymar, as of right now, I know you keep telling us, oh, the Mbappe contract will be signed. Leonardo said, oh, it's done. But it hasn't been signed yet.
No.
So we're entering a situation where Neymar becomes a free agent in June 2022.
Yeah.
And Mbappe at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
no. So this isn't a great situation to be in.
No, and PSG said the contract for an extra 4 years with Neymar is pretty much ready, pretty much sorted. He's agreed to it. But that's what they've been saying for the last 4 months. Why is he not announced? Why is he not signed? Why is he not done? Is it because he's not sure about staying, as in next season? Is it because he wants to run down the contract and maybe go back to Barcelona on a free in a year and a few months? I don't know. Mbappe is a different story. But if we focus on Neymar, is there something a bit strange about that? Maybe. And is he wise anyway from PSG to want to give him another 4 years? He's 29. He turned 29 in February. He earns 36 million euros a year. That's a lot of money to give him an extra 4 years, when clearly your team and your squad needs strengthening for sure, but in other key positions than in his. So is it wise to keep him and give him that extension? That's the debate.
And I think the difficult thing is, in terms of potential, obviously his value is down in the sense he's got a year left. So if he agitates for a move, he's not going to be as expensive as he would be otherwise. But equally, you're still talking about huge financial commitments from other clubs that might not be in a position to go and sign him. I mean, this is a story that I think is going to run until they put pen to paper. Yeah. And I'm sure we'll be talking about it again. One other thing, me, you, and Mark Ogden, we were asked to participate. And the reason I'm looking at my phone is because, no, I haven't memorized these questions. We asked to participate on the website, where we give our assessments on a number of issues. I'm just going to run through these questions. We can do a little segment on this. Who will win the final and why? That's an original question. Who you got?
Chelsea.
Okay.
I think the back five is such a problem for Pep and City, and we saw that in the FA Cup semi-final a few weeks ago.
Don't give away too much. They can go and read the piece if you really want to know.
But Chelsea, I think.
Okay. Augie, weirdly, has Chelsea as well. I have City, so there. I just think they're a better team.
Yeah.
The player of the knockout rounds, Augie, has Phil Foden. Bunch of honorable mentions, Bellingham, Mahrez, etc. But his choice is Phil Foden. Who's yours?
N'Golo Kanté. And I cannot understand how he's not everybody's choice. You know, the two games against Atletico Madrid, He was amazing. The two games against Real Madrid, he was amazing. Let's not forget that N'Golo Kanté is fasting for Ramadan. And that, yet he puts performances like we saw in the two Real Madrid games when he hasn't eaten all day. And he comes out and plays. It's almost like Chelsea had 12 players on the pitch.
Okay, I'm going to pick Phil Foden simply because he played more games. So there.
What do you mean more games? One, maybe one more, because Kanté played against Porto and the two Atletico Madrid. So what? He played...
All right, okay, all right, you can go and debate this.
5 out of 6, and for them play 6 out of 6.
Opinions are like belly buttons. Everybody has one. Now, which of the two losing semifinalists has a bigger rebuild? I think this is an interesting question in light of what we just talked about.
Yeah.
With Mbappe and Neymar, I chose Real Madrid, though.
Me too.
Because there's higher stakes, bigger club, more questions, yeah. Older players.
Yeah.
We're on board with that, right?
Yeah, and I don't even want to think about the PSG rebuild. I'm, you know, so please, okay. Not for now at least.
Augie has also chosen Real Madrid. And our final question is, what change would you like to see in the knockout phases of the Champions League? I'm going to go with mine,
because
it's what I say every year, which is what I want to see is the seedings in the first round, or in the round of 16, I don't really mean that much, because the reality is sometimes you may be a better team, but, you know, simply, you know, there may be a really good team that finished second in a different group because of the way it's set up. You might not want to play them. You might not want to play at home second. Some teams are better suited to playing at home first. You may want to...
So you mean the top two qualifies and then everybody can play each other?
No. What I'm saying is right now, the way it works is you have all the first place teams playing all the second place teams.
Yeah.
And all the first place teams play away from home first.
Yeah.
Why don't we make it meaningful? Why don't we have a number one top seed based on ranking or how they group stage, whatever way you want to do it, and we sell them, hey, you can pick anyone... You can choose your opponent, and you can choose
your opponent.
Yes, and you can choose if you play away first or home first, because that way you can take into account international breaks. You can take into account whatever your domestic fixtures are. I would love that, because it would create another level of strategy, which would be a great talking point. And I also think it would make it meaningful. It would make it really meaningful. There would be a meaningful reward for doing well in the group stage, much more so than now, where you have this randomness. You might still have the other things about you can't face the team that you played in the group stage and teams from the same country, whatever. But that would be my suggestion.
What's wrong with the boards that you open and stuff?
Because it doesn't really reward. Being in first seed is, I don't think it's entirely meaningless, but you know, it just might not suit some certain teams. So why not give them the option? Augie, not surprisingly, man of the people.
Yeah.
He wants to reduce the automatic slots for the top leagues from 4 clubs to 3, blah, blah, blah. Red, you know, yeah. Steaua Bucharest, yeah, whatever. Yeah. What's yours?
Scrap the away goals. This I never liked it. I don't like it. If you want UEFA at the start, Gianni, do it just in extra time, and they don't count anymore in extra time. But I think now we've passed the away goals.
Well, because they were designed to provide an incentive back in the old days, yeah, of straight knockouts.
A long time ago.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think the game has moved on.
Yeah.
If you want to do it, if either scrap them, or if you want to put another twist in it, say, okay, if it finishes level rather than using away goals, you know, after extra time, the winner is whatever the higher ranked team is. And that gives the other team an incentive to try to win as a tiebreaker.
Yeah.
Just because we don't want to go see a bunch of penalties. I don't, anyway. Yeah. But anyway, food for thought. Check it out. It's up on our website. All right, enough Champions League. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
It only took 15 days for Jose Mourinho to get a new job after being relieved of duty at Spurs. Jules, he's going to take over from our buddy Paulo Fonseca at Roma next season. I'd say this is pretty counterintuitive.
I mean, I have to say, wow. Wow, 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 because I didn't see this one coming. We both thought that Mauricio Sarri was the leading contenders for that job. And we also thought that no one would give another job in the big leagues for Jose Mourinho. But hey, Roma and the Friedkin family went for him. I think Thiago Pinto, the sporting director, played a big part in it. But this could work.
What I'm told is, yeah, obviously you're going to say he played a big part because they're both Portuguese. I think it was a case of he became available. They said, we got to talk to him. And he seduced him. But yeah. I'll tell you what. The amazing thing about Mourinho, I mean, I've got to call him up on this, I'll go more in depth with it, is A, how quickly it happened, and B, we've been critical of him, a lot of people have, But this is a guy who goes and he's immediately putting his backside on the line. He's going out there ready to be criticized. This is a really, really, really difficult job in so many different ways. And so, you know, I think you have to admire that. A lot of people might have taken an easier route.
Yeah, and also his reputation in Italy is still very, very good. You know, people still remember, of course, the years at
Inter. People keep saying this, but, you know, we watched the Premier League in Italy too, right? We know what happened.
I know, but Roma fans were excited. They were happy. Yeah. You know, some if, let's say, he'd gone into maybe another English club here, the fans might have showed far more discontent than what the Roma fans were excited, and good for them.
No, it's true.
Them
Roma fans can change your mind very quickly.
Exactly. 2004, the last title, by the way, for Roma. So, hey, Jose, big job on your hands. You know,
2004, true. I think it's more like 2001, but hey.
Oh, okay.
Under Fabio Capello.
Gab, you wrote a story with Moises Lawrence reporting last night and breaking the story that UEFA are ready to take disciplinary measures against the teams that haven't really properly given up on the Super League project that could go into a two-year ban from European competitions, although it could be more complicated than that, right?
Yeah, look, this is because it's a complicated story. So basically, Alexander Shefren said, you know, after the Super League collapse or the project collapse, he came out and he said, look, everybody's going to be punished, but because we have to punish everybody, but there's different tiers to this. He said, you know, the six English clubs who immediately pulled out, I'll treat them differently from three other clubs. And then there's another group of three clubs who, you know, were in, but maybe they weren't really in. And then the baddies, in his view, were Real Madrid, Juventus, and Barcelona.
Yeah.
And so what's been happening is they've been kind of negotiating behind the scenes with these clubs and saying, like, look, we have to punish you. We're going to ask you to formally pull out. And some of them have already done it. We're going to ask you to kind of commit to never doing this again. And there will be some kind of sanction, whether it's a fine or squad reduction. We don't know what that is. But it's not going to be something heavy. And he's tried to cut this deal with as many clubs as possible. So far, all six English clubs and Atletico Madrid have, at least informally, agreed this deal. Yeah. Inter Milan, I'm told, are wobbling over this. Real Madrid, Juventus, Barcelona, and Milan, as of right now, have not agreed to it and are still sticking to their guns. This is important because I was told that according to the statutes of the Super League, when there are only three teams remaining, essentially the Super League dissolves.
Right.
So they have to go and they have to turn at least one more club, as well as Inter Milan, who we think may turn, they may not, they have to turn another club. The clubs themselves, and so that's why they're using the threat of this disciplinary action, and in the end it can result in a ban. Now, the clubs themselves say, well, hang on a minute, we're pretty confident that it won't result in a ban because, A, we have the injunction from the Madrid court that says you can't discipline us until this issue is resolved, and B, the ban would be based presumably on Article 51, which stops teams from banding together without UEFA's permission. And they say in the documentation, when we formed the Super League that we sent to UEFA and to FIFA, we said, guys, we want to form a new competition. Will you give us permission? Will you give us recognition? So they're saying it's a bit different. Look, it's a lot of complicated stuff for lawyers. The important thing is there's a lot of work to be done behind the scenes. They're going head to head on this. Right now, from what I'm getting from the clubs, is they're sticking to their guns. They think they're on very, very solid legal territory. What is important is that they don't lose another one out of this core of clubs. I think the next to flip, a lot of people think it might be Milan. Others think it could be Barcelona. Jean Laporta, perhaps a bit softer, certainly, than Juventus and Real Madrid in this one. Or they may stick it out. Oh. But watch this space.
Crazy.
Manchester United's game against Liverpool, which was postponed due to the fan protest, has been moved to Thursday, May 13th. Jules, they play Leicester on Tuesday, May 11th. Aston Villa on May 9th. This is a heavy workload. 3 games in 6 days.
It's crazy. 3-6, 4-8, even if you take the next one after that. I know you had to find space to play that Liverpool game, but you know, you're risking the health of the players like this. And of course he can rotate, and he will rotate, not Bruno
Fernandes.
He knows
he's going to finish second. So,
no, I know, but still, you should not be in this position. And I know it's a very special season, and I think you can understand that. But, you know, it's just not ideal. And what happens if someone gets injured, seriously injured, or there's... Right. Yeah, I'm not too keen, but again, I understand
you
had to find... Yeah, exactly. The New York Times revealed that Manchester City are engaged in arbitration with the Premier League over whether they violated financial fair play regulations again Gab, I thought that case had been thrown out by the CAS before. Is it a new one, or is what was it?
So that was the UEFA case. This has to do with in 2014. Obviously, they were punished along with your friends at Paris Saint-Germain. Yep. Then subsequently, the Football League's revelations at Der Spiegel showed that they may have, you know, not fully or accurately reported the numbers. That's why UEFA banned, or UEFA's club financial control body banned City for 2 years. City had that case overturned by the Court of Arbitration for Sport, partly because some of the violations that they were accused of doing were time barred. Now, there is no time bar in the Premier League. I think the Premier League would rather not have a public open court case. Mm. So they're engaged in some level of arbitration over this. I don't know. It seems it's going to be very difficult to explain, wait, they're innocent here, but they're guilty here. I don't know how much appetite there is from the Premier League at this time anyway. But yeah, the case is ongoing. Wow. Ronald Koeman's touchline ban has been upheld, which means he won't be there when Barcelona face Atleti this weekend. Jules, is this a big deal?
I think it is. It's never ideal when your manager is not on the bench. I mean, the Koeman will replace the Koeman because Erwin will be there. I mean, Erling Claesson probably as well, and he will be on the phone in the stands. At least he won't be too far.
He wasn't there against Valencia. It didn't cause a problem.
This is not Atletico either, Valencia. So no, I just don't think it's either. It could be a big deal, trust me. Chelsea have announced that from July 1st, three supporters will be included in their board meeting, at least four board meetings through the season, as observer. Does this mean anything, Gab? Is it good?
Look, these guys are going to be subject to non-disclosure agreements. They won't be there when they're discussing things like coaching appointments or signings or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think it's a meaningful step, right? Mm-hmm. That they're being included in it. And I think they're going to provide some fan feedback. If the fans feel strongly about something, I think it's something that you can welcome. I don't think this is just a token gesture.
Yeah.
UEFA have approved expanded squads for the Euros. Teams will have 26 players rather than the usual 23. This makes sense, right, Jules?
Completely. In the current context with COVID, you don't know what will happen during the Euros. Some players might test positive. I mean, it seems that only Gareth Southgate was the one not so keen on it. So come on.
Because it's hard to manage so many players. We don't even know if he said that. It was just something people reported.
But now you can still bring Mount and Madison and Grealish and Foden and Gab and me and producer Freddie, everyone if you want. You've got 26, you know.
Too many riches.
Jens Lehmann has been removed from the supervisory board of Hertha Berlin for sending a very inappropriate message to Denis Awogo. Gab, they had no choice really, did they?
Yeah, so this is an ugly story. Denis Awogo, of course, another former German international. Yeah. He's a person of color. He was appearing as a pundit on television, giving his views. And what Lehmann did was he wrote a message saying, oh, look, here's the token black guy, something to that effect. Yeah. Now, he meant to send that message, I presume, to some friend of his.
Certainly not to Denis, no.
Yeah, because his WhatsApp skills are about as good as my 78-year-old mom's, he ended up sending the message to Denis Awogo, who then reposted it on social media.
Rightly so.
This is a really ugly story. I think, especially Hertha Berlin, I think, had zero choice in this because they're trying to be a big club in Germany. Yep. It's a big city. It's a multicultural city. You can't have somebody who views people of color as tokens when they're in positions of authority. There's no question there. Lehmann has apologized. Awogo has supposedly accepted the apology, but let's face it, he's toast.
Yeah.
Manchester United boss Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, in addition to complaining about the roles of certain ex-pros and stoking the Glazer fan protests, I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest that maybe it's one of the Nevilles, maybe, possibly.
And
probably not Tracy or Phil. He says he's received a personal apology from the Glazers. He doesn't say which one. I'm going to assume maybe it's Joel, since that's the one who speaks, unlike his brother Avram, the guy with the ponytail who doesn't seem to talk at all.
Yeah.
He's like Silent Bob. Jules, are you impressed? Does it make a difference?
I think he deserves.
Is this like a peculiarly English obsession? They have to apologize.
Maybe that's true. I think he deserved one though. And as we saw, a lot of clubs have apologized to the players, coaches, fans, etc. So, you know, I like the fact that they picked up the phone and called him directly and said, "Hey, we're sorry, we misjudged that one," or whatever they said. And he's also right in a way, if that's his view on former players, but everybody's also right to voice their opinion. You know, if you don't like the Glazers or the Kroenkes, whether you are a former player or not, it doesn't matter. If you feel strongly about it, say it.
Yeah,
Don't encourage maybe people breaking in and not following the rules and stuff like that. But certainly,
I think that this is a relevant point. Obviously, we want to hear people in the game come out and give their views. This idea that, you know, Joel Glazer has to apologize personally to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has to be put in a position where he's like, "Ooh, did Joel Glazer apologize?" You know, I'm like, all right, enough of this. Because let's listen very frankly, right? Do you and I believe that Joel Glazer feels he's sorry that he tried to launch a European Super League?
No, nobody believes that.
So I don't care if you apologize. You've got your view. I respect your view. I don't agree with it. That's fine. I don't need you to go and do the dance where you throw ashes on your head. It's different maybe for John Henry, because that is a different situation.
Yeah.
That's a different context. So. But once the club have come out, they've said what they said, and look, I don't blame Solskjaer for sharing that he got an apology. Fine. You know, I just wish it's just not helping Solskjaer to be put in this position where he's got to keep talking and talking about, did they apologize to you? This is his boss, this is his employee he's talking about. Yeah. Why are you putting him in the spot like that?
Yeah, I guess so. Antonio Conte may have won the title in Italy with Inter, but he's still being linked with the Spurs job. Gab, come on, please tell me this is just for the show, right?
Listen, Antonio Conte has an enormous salary at Inter. He's got a year left on his contract. He just won the title. Rightly, like we said before, he's going to seek reassurances, seek to extend his deal, maybe even make a little bit more money.
His people put that out.
I don't know. Where were you? There's no doubt that his people would put this out there.
Yeah.
There's also no doubt that, you know, we've gone through the list of people who they've turned down. They're already operating it. You know, was it Rafa Benitez, Ralph Rangnick, which are kind of the...
Graham Potter,
we don't know
Scott
where
Parker.
We want to go. So Graham Potter would be a good one.
Yes.
But wouldn't you, if you were looking after Conte, wouldn't you ring up Daniel Levy and say, "Hey, Daniel, do you want to talk about Antonio?"
Yeah.
And if you're Daniel Levy, says, "Ah, sure, why not? Let's talk about him."
Yeah,
you know?
But he can't leave Inter to go to Spurs, right? That's not possible.
It would be extraordinary, but I don't think it's impossible. Right, we didn't see Jose Mourinho going to Spurs either, right?
No, I know,
Antonio Conte is
not
kind
on the
of
back
like,
of winning Serie A and being the best team in Italy, and having
it
something.
Would be hugely disappointing to a lot of people if he did. Yeah. Yes, I agree with that. Ibrahima Konate has reportedly agreed personal terms with Liverpool. Now they need to work things out with Leipzig. Is this a good move? This story keeps coming up, but.
Yeah, I think it's just a question of time before it's fully done and announced. There's a release clause to pay, which is 40 million euros, which I think for a player like Konate is a really good price. And he's a really good player, and we said it. And please spare me that he's injury prone, because he isn't injury prone. And I've told you already on this show that, yes, he had one bad hip injury, but this is it. The rest is little niggles there and there, like every other player. But trust me, he is good. And he's Paris born and bred, so that makes him even more special.
Does it mean you send Ozan Kabak, who is most definitely not Paris born and bred, back?
Yeah, although you could, I think Joel Matip's time at Liverpool.
You hope somebody takes Joel Matip away?
And Nat Phillips, and then you've got Van Dijk, Gomez, Kabak and Konate, and then you look really, really good and really strong defensively. Pisa striker Michele Marconi has received a 10-game ban for using racist language towards Chievo's Nigerian midfielder Joel Obi. Gab, is this enough? And just what's the story? Go back to the story.
Yeah, so look, obviously we're all talking about racist and discriminatory language. I think there are levels of degrees of what was said. So he got a 10-game ban, which of course is what Andre Kudela also got for abusing Glenn Kamara. He didn't quite go and racially abuse Joel Obi directly the way it's alleged that Kudela was found guilty of doing with Kamara. He came out and he said, you know, there was a confrontation, and, you know, he said, "Well, look, calm down. This isn't the slave revolt." So it's a reference to slavery.
Yeah.
That was his defense. This is why the first time, you know, he was cleared of the aggravating, you know, the racist or discriminatory aggravating factor to this. The second time they said, no, this applies. Look, if you use Kudela as your benchmark, I think what Kudela is alleged to have done, or what Kudela was found guilty of doing, is far, far worse within the context. Mm. This is still bad. In the end, we're talking about how long is a piece of string. You know, do we want to give lifetime bans for this or whatever? But if you use Kudela as a benchmark, I think this is a much tougher punishment than what Kudela got. I mean, most important thing is that people learn that in this context, there's certain things you cannot say.
Completely.
Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has revealed that he lost 4 kilograms, or around 9 pounds, during his recent bout with malaria. Scary stuff, Jules, because, you know, Aubameyang is kind of a thin, wiry sort of guy. Like, that is...
Yeah, it was hit really, really hard. He picked it up with Gabon in during one of the international breaks, and then came back, and then said he had a really, really horrid time, first at home, and then he had to go to hospital. And it is scary. I know, we had a lot of COVID cases, some more serious than others, but this sounded like a proper ordeal for Aubameyang.
And there's a vaccine for malaria, though, isn't there?
Yeah,
yes, because
so.
I've taken
and
it.
Yeah. Well, I think when you travel to certain countries, maybe in around the world, you have to take it.
But I think the vaccine also has, as I recall, the vaccine also has serious side effects.
Yes.
So maybe this is why. Maybe they were going someplace that wasn't considered
exactly.
a malaria high risk case, area, and they said obviously he's a professional athlete. Yeah. Maybe that's why he didn't take it.
No, you're right. And it's been a tough year for him. His mum was ill at times. That he had to go back home to France and all of that. So let's hope that all those bad moments are behind him, and then he can focus on the end of the season and try to finish the season on a high with Arsenal. Erling Haaland didn't train on Wednesday and remains a doubt for Borussia Dortmund's big game against Leipzig. Gab, how fit is he going to be, even if he can make it and be back for the game?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think he's not going to lose his fitness levels. He hasn't been out. He hasn't been out that
for too long.
I think what you need to look at is, with that sort of injury, do you risk re-injuring it, re-aggravating it if you play? I mean, as we tape this on Thursday, you know, I think if he can get a training session under his belt, I think he's good to go.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't somebody who needs to regain his fitness. His understanding of the game is fine. As long as you're not putting him in danger of re-aggravating the injury, I think that's what's most important here. Mm. Ansu Fati, Barcelona superstar in the making, is going under the knife again, reportedly, Jules.
Yeah, again, and they were not happy, him and his agent. I think it looks like, certainly the way the story has been reported in Spain, that Jorge Mendes made that call and changed the surgeon as well for the knee surgery. Not happy with the last one.
It should be Dr. Jorge Mendes, of course.
Yeah, probably. It's such a shame, because he's such a terrific young player, of course, one of the biggest prodigies that you can see in world football right now, and he would have a blank season completely. He played a few games at the beginning of the year, even with Spain, did really well, and then that knee injury really stopped him and left him out for the whole season. I mean, at that age.
I suspect, my boy Nicolò Zaniolo also missed the whole season.
Yeah, yeah.
But I suspect that part of the issue here might also be, you want to make sure that he heals right. Do you see what I'm saying? You don't want a situation where he comes back, you know, maybe in time for the final games of the season and the Euros, and then all of a sudden, you know, you've re-aggravated it and it carries with you. Still very, very young. Yeah. Just make sure you're fit and
get going for next season. I think that's the idea, that
absolutely.
You can be ready for the start of pre-season. Bayern legend Lothar Matthäus has laid out all the ways it's going to be difficult for Julian Nagelsmann at Bayern. Gab, are you surprised by his negativity, or are we just used to it now?
Look, Lothar Matthäus does his job, right? He's a pundit. He analyzes, he criticizes. His glass is usually half full. Half empty.
Yeah.
It's not that different from what we're doing.
Quarter.
I think Bayern are a completely different organization to Leipzig. There are going to be legitimate questions.
I know, but as if Julian Nagelsmann doesn't know that himself and doesn't know that he will have to adapt a little bit.
You know? Everybody knows it. You're going to have to navigate, you know, the exit stage right of Lewandowski and Müller and then later Neuer.
Yeah.
That is a big, big ask. You're going to deal with, you know, Brazo and whatever else, and Uli and Oli Kuni takes over. And the fact, all the talking heads are about you. I mean, we get the impression, certainly from Leipzig, that if they do have a lot of debate over signings, over contracts, it's all very internal, right?
Yeah.
We don't find out about it. At Bayern, it's all very public. So that's going to be something for him to adjust to. But he's young. He's super smart.
Chance.
He knows what he's getting into. The club are spending a ton of money to get him. I mean, thank you, Lothar. These are the challenges. I agree with you. Let's let him work now. La Liga are investigating a barbecue at Lionel Messi's house in Casteldefels, I believe. It may have violated COVID protocols. Jules, he needs this like he needs a hole in the head right now.
I mean, what's wrong with a barbecue, Gab? You know, a little asado with all your friends, dancing the tango with Antoine Griezmann, and
no, it I was think just Messi sunny. Does the tango. Messi's more of a cumbia type guy.
Yeah, maybe.
Important thing, stay safe, don't violate COVID protocols.
Exactly.
Let's find out the truth.
Follow the rules, that's all. Portuguese newspaper Record are reporting that Cristiano Ronaldo is open to a move back to Sporting Lisbon this summer, Gab, where it all started, and his family, as you would, you know, understand, are very much in favour. Do you believe in it? Can you see it happening?
I think it would be a great story. Obviously, what would need to happen is, A, Cristiano would want to go. Juventus would say, okay, you can go. I'm sure there's not going to be a transfer fee involved, given his wages. Mm. Juventus would have to say, okay, fine, we'll take the savings on his wages. From a storyline perspective, it would be fantastic. The guy going back to where it all began, yeah. Sporting Lisbon are a good side.
They're going to be in Champions League because they're going to win the league.
Maybe I'd like Juve if I wanted to be mean. Yeah. Great story. But in the end, Cristiano, I think, has earned the right to do whatever he wants to do, whatever it is. But this would be pretty cool if that's what he wants to do.
Yeah.
That brings us to an end. But Jules, what do we have here?
Well, we've got our friends from Panini who send us an album for the Euros and the stickers and some packs as well. Like when we were kids, Gab. Which is so cool.
It is, yes. You can go and collect these and stick them in there.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people can relate to this.
Of course. We'll do swaps as well if you have some doubles.
I'm sure I'll be doing a lot of swapping. this brings us to an end. But we got to come back on Monday to do this again. Huge games this weekend. Milan and Juventus, Barcelona and Atleti, Chelsea and Man City.
Yeah.
Wow. This season goes on and on. Until then, love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.